really have a name.
The PTPT.
Be the PTPT.
I like that.
Good morning. It's good mid morning for me, but good morning to Rebecca because she's in the great state of Colorado.
The best.
I would have to say, and this is not, we're going to talk about grief today. But before we do that, I mentioned this to you the other day. Colorado has number one or number two best state flag. So I think it's you in California. Yeah. I like the bear, though. I do like the California bear. The New York ones, I'm not in love with it. There's nothing to write home about. At least,
I mean, but is it as recognizable as Texas's state flag?
Texas reminds me of Puerto Rico.
Notorious, you mean? As notorious as the Texas state flag?
I mean, that's valid. That is valid.
I didn't think we were going to get into this.
But you know how like they make like those like cool things where you can get like jewelry in the shape of your state or like one of those beer things where you can put a beer from Colorado's is just a square.
Well, so notice that like the states in the this what was the guy from the Daily Show who wound up doing the show called How the States Got Their Shapes? That's a show. It's a pretty intriguing one. I think it's made for kids, but like I'm drawn in. And they talk about how they got shaped. But look at when you go east to west, like Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, like New York, like Maryland is insane. Pennsylvania is kind of a big rectangle, right? Kind of weird. And then as you go out west, they get very square, very geometric.
So yeah. Oh, that's why we have to have a snazzy flag because our state shape is.
It's a box. It's good.
I mean, it's a square. Yeah. It's a square.
I have no idea how I'm going to radio segue from. I did not plan on the intro being about state flags and Colorado and states and their shapes. And now we're going to talk about grief. We sort of get together. We do this live stream. It's sort of like an accountability thing to flex our muscles because all three of us podcast or create content. So this is a way that we don't have to. I like it because I don't have to do everything here. Not that I have to do everything with a guest, but you do a lot as a host. Here. Right. We're all three hosts, so it's like I can pass the ball and then I can just sit back and just sip a espresso and be like, okay, you guys take over. And just before we go live, we talk about what are we going to talk about today. And I usually like to prompt, like, what are you excited about, thinking about, worried about, scared about, whatever, and let's talk about that because it's real. And we decided upon grief today. So why grief? Anybody can answer, and then I'll jump in as well. What is it? I think we have to define it first.
Oh.
Not the official definition, your definition. How do you define grief? I'm going to steal someone else's. I'm going to go last because you won't be able to top this guy's definition.
Ooh. I'm going to steal somebody else's as well. So I think it was Andrew Garfield.
That was mine.
Okay. Sorry, Jimmy. Sorry, Jimmy. We'll share it. This is Jimmy and I's. But like, grief is love that we didn't get to express or, you know, share at the time of when the person was alive. It's much more poignant when Andrew says it. But I mean, I don't know that I've heard a better definition than like.
When you hear his definition, you then say, you exhale and you go, oh, that's it. Yeah. Like you just put where. So I have it pulled up.
Oh, please. Yes.
The grief. So he was on a late night talk show. And I know how this goes because I worked in radio. Mm-hmm. Your people or you'll meet with the show that day or a week before. You'd be like, what's on the docket? What are we talking about here? You know, what's happened? They're trying to get things to bring up. And I don't remember, it was his mother that had passed away or somebody close to his mother. Yeah. Mom. Okay. So his mother has passed away, and that probably was not even brought up by the show. He likely brought that up, or his people said, I would like to talk about this. And the show probably went, we're sort of a light late night show. And then he probably in an Andrew Garfieldy way said, here's why. And so that's how that setup happened. It's not by accident, but it wasn't. It's not scripted. I want to make sure we understand his definition or that interaction wasn't scripted. And then he said this was the quote. The grief that will remain with us until we pass, because we never get enough time with each other, no matter whether someone lives until they're 60 or 15 or 99. And then he said, I hope this grief stays with me because it's all the unexpressed love that I didn't get to tell her. And I told her every day she was the best of us. So like when you hear that, you're like, ooh, yep, that's it. And I like that because it's not a negative anymore. Now it's a positive.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I have heard that kind of similarly expressed is that grief is your receipt.
Oh.
It's the thing that you show to the world to prove that you loved, that you had this great love and you can hold it up in the air and say, I loved deeply.
Yeah. I don't know where to go now.
Ooh, I'm already feeling the tears like up, honestly. Yeah. And you know, I'm in my early 30s. I've been really lucky up to this point that I haven't had a whole lot of my own friends and family die unexpectedly. So like I had, you know, grandparents who were older, you know, like we knew it was coming. We could prepare for it. But this past year, actually 2023 was like a really rough year for me for grief wise, because it was the first time that I had people close to me who went far before their time. And that has been a really big learning experience for me. I'm kind of curious how y'all have experienced grief in your own way. Cause like I've had grief.
Yeah.
I've done the grief, but now that I've had this different side of grief, it's like, ooh, this is different. And we're unpacking a lot of things in therapy around grief for me personally right now.
Well, I think I touched upon this a couple of times, right? I talked about it with Rebecca, who was somebody, by the way, when I was going, I've gone through two types of grief in the last year and a half, and they're vastly different. It's with both my parents. And I've mentioned this a couple of times, but I haven't really talked about it, but why not? It's free therapy. Let's get some. And so my mom died a year and a half ago, I think. This is the summer of 2022. And that was after 6 months. So she had like, I kept like lying to her, not knowing, but she kept like getting sick. And I'd be like, all right, we got it. This is going to be great. We're going to get you better and go home. And we would. And then she'd get something else. It was like Final Destination. It was like over and over and over. And I started to feel like I'm just like lying over and over. So she wound up, she had this weird statin-induced myopathy. This is a thing we need to talk about, because this is a thing I even have trouble Googling. People in the hospital didn't know what it was. Essentially, she'd been taking statins for years, like a good person, taking her medication, right? Mm-hmm. And it induced this myopathy where she couldn't lift her hands to touch her hair. She couldn't wash her hair. She couldn't get up. And I'm like, but I didn't even know to look for this. So anyway, she had that. She was like dying, like laying in a bed, atrophying to death. And I'm like, is anyone else freaking out? I had to run into the hospital. I don't know if I told you this. I had to run into the hospital one day and be a complete asshole because she was getting no attention. And I asked a friend and I just said, what are the words I needed to say at a hospital in a calm voice to make everyone panic? And she told me, because she used to work at that hospital. She was like, ask for the patient advocate, ask for this. Essentially pushing the button, being like, it without having to scream and yell and break things, which is a negative, what I wanted to do it. I knew what the words to say, and then everybody's in the room. And then I was like, I have my boots on and I was ready to put them somewhere, right? But I needed my mom to see, I'm here and I'm going to lose my mind for you. So anyway, it's an aside, but we did that. Then she came home. Then she had a stroke at my house, and that wasn't fun. Very expensive ride in a helicopter. I'm like, hey, what did you think about the helicopter? She's like, I don't remember. And I go, yeah, that's the downside of that.
Yeah.
And then she came and then, you know, was in rehab for that, but like talking, doing really well at a rehab hospital. I'm like, and I'm there. I am going, well, we're going to get you through this. I understand this. And then, she went from acute to subacute. And I'm like, we're getting there. You know, now you're 5 minutes away from my house, not 55 minutes away from my house. And then was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. So I was like, I have to come and tell you this. It's like, don't kill the messenger. But I also didn't want anybody else to tell her. I wanted to tell her. But you're also like, and I'm back. So, and then it was about 6 months, maybe less from when I told her that. Oh, it was less. It was 2 months from when I told her that to when she wound up dying. But I was there like every day, and I have these weird jobs where I do stuff and I can do stuff remotely, but I was checked out, man. Like, kudos to anybody who listened to anything I share. I don't have much recollection of anything going on then. That time period is weird. So that was my first real, you know, I've had some people pass away on me and it sucks and there's grief there, but I think this is a really amped up version of it. Cause it's your mom, man. Like, it's your mom or a sibling or your dad or like a close aunt, uncle or grandma, like, or cousin. Like, those are, I don't know. It's different. It hits, it's closer. So when I heard Andrew Garfield, I was like, that's cool. Cause then you got to go home. Like, we didn't have a funeral, by the way. I don't know if I told you this. Again, I haven't talked about this in the podcast, so we're going to have word vomit now. I didn't ask her what she wanted us to do. Cause again, who wants to ask your mom that? Like, who wants to spend 90 seconds on that? But I knew, I was like, what do you want me to, what are your thoughts? And she was like, do whatever. And she hated funerals and knew that because we'd been to funerals together. And she's like, I hate these things. She never said, don't do this for me. And then I just thought, like, what would my mom want to do? So we threw like a, this pissed some people off, but we had a remembrance of life or a ceremony of life, but it was open bar. Like, my mom loved parties. Love like, and people are like, are you sure? And I'm like, have you met my mom? Like, this wasn't, I think she would like it. Like, it was a no doubter. So I rented like a pavilion at like a really nice country club, and we had food, and my brother like we have music and food and an open bar. And I remember the bartender being like, well, this is like a celebration of life. Like, what's the tab? And I was like, we're gonna do some damage here. Like, I've got friends, and they're like, most funerals. And I'm like, not a funeral. She's like, usually it's about $1,500. And I was like, oh, challenge accepted. Like, I'm like, let me know when we hit five, and then we'll throttle it back. And then she was like an hour and a half in, she's like, we're at five. I don't know what you're doing out there. And I go, we are sad. What's happening? So that was my first. I told you I had two, but I'm going to pause there because that was my first. But then, yeah, you got to go home. Then because the party's great. I mean, it's not great, but it's like there's people and you're not alone.
Right.
And you're talking about it and you're not alone in being pissed and sad. And then you go home. And that sucks.
Well, Jimmy, I want to acknowledge you for like grieving that whole time with your mom, because when the person you're about to lose knows they're about to die, you are grieving with them, you're fighting for them, you're walking them home. And I think that's a whole different kind of grief. There's a grief when somebody dies unexpectedly. There's a grief when somebody dies expectedly. But when you have to walk with somebody to the end and then help them go. So that's one of the best things you'll ever do in your life. And she knows that.
Yeah. She didn't cry. I did. She didn't cry.
I think we're going to cry a lot today.
I think so.
I think is what's going to happen.
You guys can talk now because I don't think.
So the reason I was thinking about grief today is because my best friend died 2 years ago today from breast cancer. And it was like unexpected because we just knew she was going to make it. Like, I have several friends who have had breast cancer and everybody has survived. And, you know, like 2 days before, she was walking laps around the football field. She was talking to me on the phone. She was like, yesterday was my mom's birthday. And so she had reached out to tell my mom happy birthday. And then the night of February 8th, she was just unexpectedly gone and has three kids about the same age as my kids. And like, this is the kind of friend that like our moms were pregnant together. So that womb to tomb kind of best friend, you know, from West Side Story, womb to tomb. And
I've never heard that term.
Yeah, womb to tomb. There's a less appropriate version of that. But, you know, like we were friends our whole lives.
Yeah.
And I think for me, I feel so upset that she's not still here because I feel bad that I'm still living without her.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I also don't really know how to.
Yeah.
And it's that expectation. So I think that's my point here, if there is one, that when you have an expectation about how things should go, that when that expectation is taken from you, it makes the grief, I don't know, heavier, angrier, more painful. My dad passed away. And I can talk about that, but your parents are supposed to die before you. There's some expectation there. So it was awful, but this was just so much different because she was 40 years old.
Yeah.
And we have this whole future together. And we were the kind of friends that even if we didn't talk for 6 months, as soon as we were together, it was like we were never apart. And we lived most of our lives at a distance from one another. But the way that she would just show up in my life, like when I needed her to be there, I just, you can't replace something like that. but like what a profound privilege I had to know her and to learn from her and to be part of her whole life.
Yeah.
From the very beginning of her life, she was 2 weeks older than me. So I guess she lived 16 days without me. And then we were, I mean, for her whole life. So that's why I'm thinking about it today. And last year, I think I cried all day on this day. And today I thought, no, that's not going to happen. I'm not going to cry all day. But I reached out to some of her family and they just said, it just never gets better, does it?
Does cry make you feel better?
No.
So sometimes it does.
No,
like,
I hate
cry super hard, like in an hour for like 2 minutes. And then I'm like, I'm done now. I feel better sometimes.
No, not for me. I hate it. I hate everything about it. So, but I'm learning to like, grief is not linear. Grief doesn't have a start or an end. It's like waves. I think some days you can wade in them and some days you're pulled under by them.
Good way to look at it.
Yeah. I don't know. That's why I'm thinking about it today.
Yeah. I mean, at least like you work in a field where this is not uncommon, like, you know, in orthopedics, I'm not saying you don't lose patients, but like you work in one where the likelihood is it's, you know, it sort of looms. So the conversations around this either personally or professionally, like it's not, it's more common for what you do in oncology.
Yeah. But I mean, it doesn't necessarily make it easier. And I know that's not what you're saying at all, but I do feel like it's almost easier to grieve for me. It's almost easier to grieve my patients because there is a line of that's professional Elise, and professional Elise cries with patients for patients. But for me, I think the grief is hardest when it crosses into that personal, like, especially when I have a relationship with the patient, you know, like I've worked with them for a long time. It's that, you know, like you just really bond with some people. It doesn't get easier for me. Like over the past almost 6 years I've been doing this, I think I almost just, I don't get better at grieving. I'm just more of like, all right, this is like, it's going to be okay to grieve this patient. And I can still hold that space and then show up for my next patient. And
because
it's okay.
Because you're familiar, it's not the first time. It's not the 10th time. Like, is it like, okay, this is going to suck, but I understand sort of what this feels like.
I do think I've now had that practice almost of like, I know what it feels like to grieve a patient. And I know what I need to do to grieve that patient. I know how I need to grieve that patient. But I will, like, just for the listener's sake, that has not, that does not cross into my personal life because my personal grieving has been a wild ride.
But, you know, even professional Elise, like, that's your personal, that's you. So, like, where's work-life balance? Like, there's life and work is part of life. So, like, when you grieve in work, like, that's your life. Like, but some things are closer, some things are heavier, some things are deeper, some things mean, not that that patient doesn't mean a lot, that's their life, but it's like, it's your whatever. Yeah, so it's just different, right? And there's no right. Yeah. Like, my, you know, I have a brother. My brother and I, like, a vastly wild, same parents, wildly different, and that's okay. I mean, I'll have him on the show again. But I have a buddy who's a psychologist, and he's not my psychologist. He's my buddy who is a psychologist, but he'll check up on me. But I'm always wondering when Jamie's talking to me. You're doing that, aren't you, Jamie? You're doing the mind thing. But he's just asked super good open-ended questions, like, how's it going? And I'm like, sucks. And then he'll be like, normal. And that, I don't know, like him just being like normal is like, okay, good. Just want to make sure I'm not crazy.
So I'm wondering if it's part of how we keep the person in our brain, because you know how they say when like, there are different, like, memories are made in all kinds of different places in your brain. And so like, if I asked you to think about your mom, you could probably, it has a sound associated with it. It has a smell. It has a place. It has a feeling. It has it's a whole sensory experience.
Yeah.
And there are so many of your memories and so much of who you are that's like entangled with that person that you can't compartmentalize very well. But with a patient, I feel like there's still that profound grief, especially for the people in their lives, but they're not so interconnected in all the deep parts of your brain and all the like core memories that you have, that I feel like it's less like being amputated versus sometimes grief is like the most traumatic amputation that you can have. And I think it's because they're just in so many different wrinkles.
Like,
in
look
our
at
brain.
The words that we use. It's not an accident. Like, you know, part of you. So it's not saying like a patient like doesn't burn, and that's a burn. It's on the outside, right? It's part it's still you, but like, you know, someone close to you is a part of you. And that's, you know, it could be, you know, deeper.
Yeah.
What do you want people to know who haven't felt what you've felt? Like, what would you, you know, we can play that advice game. Like, what advice would you have given to yourself before you had to experience, like, it's kind of like, what would you tell someone who's about to be in a plane crash? It's like, prepare for impact, brace yourself, but not a whole lot that's going to save them from it. But maybe you can give them one piece of advice that they can hold on to before they go into it, because there's no user manual. This is also, I wanted to bring up, I said this in an episode a couple weeks or months ago, which is school and life are backwards. In traditional school, you get the lesson, and at the end of a lesson, you take a test. And in life, you're given a test, and then hopefully you learn lessons from this. And I feel like someone dying who's close to you is a test. And I don't know if you, maybe I'm answering my own question, which is there's no lesson you can give someone because the lesson comes after. But maybe there's like a, if you could slip yourself a cheat sheet before it, what would you do if you would go back in time?
There's not a right way to do it.
Good.
My kids experienced a profound and shocking and horrific loss of one of their friends who was actually the victim of domestic violence and a divorce situation that went really badly. And that was the first person that we had to like talk to them about. And one of my children was hysterical and the other one just shut down. And he had a lot of guilt around not crying and not doing it the right way. And I think I have been that way in several different grieving experiences as well. Sometimes it's a numb feeling. Sometimes it's like, you know, you just cry until you're done. Sometimes it's like horrific anger. Sometimes you can grieve happily. Like you can laugh and you can think back about things that make you feel good, but there's not a right way. It comes for us all differently. And to not like punish yourself if you don't feel like you're grieving enough or you're grieving correctly.
That's a good one. I got pissed because she didn't die. My mom didn't die fast. I mean, I don't know why there's a difference, but I sat there, and then you get to like soak in it and you're like, this is stupid. Like, I hate this. So those stages, right? I mean, I don't even know them. I don't have them up in front of me, but one of them is like denial, anger. What's denial, anger, acceptance. I know it's acceptance, but there's seven, aren't there? Well, I got a
good bunch. Bargaining's in there.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Six stages of grief. I was wrong. So this is why the Google is the greatest thing of all time. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. That's five. What's the guilt? Guilt is also one.
Guilt. Oh,
dude, the guilt.
Fear. Oh, so this thing that I just pulled up has a bunch of like, there's different. Oh, a grief indicator: shock and disbelief. Yeah, when I found it in a screwed up way. My mom had cancer. So she had that myopathy thing, came home, had the stroke, went to a trauma hospital, then went to acute, then went to subacute. On the way to subacute, I was checking her in, and the nurse, I forget how she even said it. It's like, well, she has the, God, what, it's like a word for cancer. Malignancy. She's like, well, there's the stage four malignancy. And I was like, what? And she was like, and then she saw from the, she like, saw, she was like, and then she like just turned the piece of paper over and circled it. And I was like, she's like, nobody at the hospital told you this? And I was like,
oh my God.
No. And I'm like, I understand the words you're using. I need you to say that again. And she was like, she has stage four cancer. And I was like, okay, we're in a hallway. I'm at a check-in desk. And I think she realized it too, where she was like, nobody told you that there. I'm like, I'm a PT. I'm not a doctor. but like I would, I mean, I guess I am. I can't say that because PTs will get mad at me. I'm not a medical doctor, but I'm like, I know what those words mean, and I'm gonna need. This was like denial, like wasn't denial. It was like, I'm gonna need you to double check that.
Yeah.
And she was like, she wanted to get to LA. She wanted to evaporate, but she was like, she realized what happened. And then I immediately like called my family doctor. I'm using air quotes because my cousin's an NP. She's like the fan, you know, every family has one. And if your family doesn't have one, you are it. And she's the one everybody goes to. And I was like, I'm going to need to repeat words to you. And I think I know what they mean. And I'm going to need you to tell me if I'm right. She was like, buddy. And I was like,
oh my God.
That was a screwed up way to find out.
Yeah.
I wanted to go murder someone. I did not actually murder anyone, but I was like, how do you not? And then I was like, maybe they told her she's not telling me. So how do I go give her? And so I was like, what? That was a little added flavor to the mix. That was fun. But yeah, I told her and she was like, okay. And I was like, I'm going to need you to repeat back that you understand. She's like, I get it. And I was like, all right. And then she was like, what's for lunch? And I was like, I don't know. But yeah, she didn't cry. I was like, do you want to say, you know, I was trying to have these deep conversations with her. She's like, can you change the channel? This one sucks. And I was like, okay. Or, you know, but there's
she's
no
right. Her baby.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
I would probably do something similar. Try and protect my kids.
Right.
But was that helpful to you?
I don't know. I don't know what I wasn't expecting her to say or do anything, but I was like, and then also I was like, I was trying not to say it like repeated also. Like, I'm like, I don't know. It's not long because it's stage 4 and like, that's like months or weeks or months. And she was like, okay. She was more like, ugh, okay. Like if I was like, you know, you got to do something that sucks for like the next couple months. And she was like, oh, fine. I guess I'll just get this over with. And I was like, all right. I'm going to go call grandma now. She's going to fly here. Like,
yeah.
So that was my first one. And that was fun. I mean, it is nice. You find out like there are people in your life that show up. And I don't, you know, this is also like interesting. Everybody wants to cook for you, which didn't make any sense for me, and then makes complete sense for me, or send me food. And I'm like, why is that a thing? And then you're like, oh, because you don't do anything. You sort of like, but you need to live and eat to live. So like someone sending you food or bringing you food or doing anything, that's actually a big deal. I get it now. But you don't get it. I'm like, why is it about food? It's like, well, nobody can really help you, and they can make a lasagna, and you also have to eat, and you don't like doing basic human tasks sometimes.
I would like somebody to laundry.
But you don't need them to live. You know what I mean?
I know, but yeah.
I'm going to be really like honest on camera here. I needed someone to come and brush my teeth for me because I physically could not brush my teeth. Like, could not.
Yeah. Basic stuff is like, gravity feels heavier. It's like, I can't not do it. I don't freaking. Why it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of life. Yes. Now you're like, why, who cares about laundry or brushing my teeth? I don't, whatever, like who cares? Yeah. Everything changes. Like I said, I was trying to work, and like God bless everybody who kept paying me, but I wasn't doing a lot. I was showing up, although I saw a graphic the other day, and it's like this cool like inspirational graphic, and it was like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and it was like different levels of like filled, and like Monday was like 80%, Tuesday was like 20%. And it was like, when you gave 20% on Tuesday, it's because you gave 100%.
Right.
Yeah. You only had 20, you gave 20. That's mathematically 100. But when you're like brushing your teeth, you're like, I don't see the point. So I'm just not going to do that. And you're like, okay. So just don't like you. I mean, all the dentists out there are screaming, brush your teeth. You're like, one day, dude, or a week, grand scheme of things. Like, just don't care. Like, and don't feel bad about the pile of laundry. It's like, because everything fell away. Like, I stopped podcasting because, like, all of a sudden, in the grand scheme, mom's dying. Doesn't matter. Right. And then I was showing up to work meetings. I was there because I was like, I gotta, you have to have a house and mortgage and a, you know, health insurance. But you're like, just going through the motions, and you see what mattered. So I just stayed at the at the subacute place with my mom. I got her in a nice room and I just sat there all day. If you ask me what I did, it was like people were sending me books, which was awesome. I didn't read one book.
No.
I just sat there. I couldn't tell you what I did, but I sat there for 19 hours a day or whatever. What did we talk about? Stuff. I remember like the big thing. I remember being there, but what the little things, don't remember.
Yeah.
It was erased. Well, not to be more of a downer, but not to be a one-upper, but then almost a year to the day, and like that's what divorced parents do, man. Like they're like, oh yeah, your mom did this. Well, I'm gonna do that.
Oh my God.
That's a stroke a year later. Thanks, Dad. I know mom had all the spotlight last year. So yeah, so my dad had a stroke a year later. And that sucks. So that's like a different kind of grief. Kathy Cholik, do you guys know Kathy Cholik? She's the she's a friend, first of all. I'm not gonna just give her a title, but she's a geriatric physical therapist. She's the president of the geriatric section. And I can't remember if she called me or texted me or DM'd me or whatever. And she was like, that's just so you know, that's grief. Like your dad's alive, that's great. So anyway, so my dad had a stroke and I have a PT degree. Hey baby, I know what to do here. Let me help. But no physical issues, no nothing. Walking. The talking was the hard part. I was like, awesome. I am not a speech pathologist. So he has aphasia. And that was July, a year, almost a year of the day, actually. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Jeez. Yeah, almost a year of the day. Super great. So I've been navigating that. But Kathy was like pointing out, she's like, there's grief there because your dad was a certain way and could make decisions and do things that he wanted to. And now he can't. That part of his life is over right now. Maybe he gets some of it back. Mm-hmm. But you have to understand that. So that's been fun.
There's also grief when you have to take on that caregiver role.
Yeah, that's something that we spent 11 minutes on in PT school. I was like, yeah, caregiving. I get it. Giving care. And then you do it and you're like, holy crap. Again, trying to have a job and do these things. And then you're taking care of your dad who's six. I'm 5'9". My dad's 6 foot. He's a bigger dude, you know, former New York City fireman, lieutenant, leapt tall buildings in a single bound. Like this is my dad. And now I'm telling him what to do. Sometimes he was okay with that. Sometimes he was very much not okay with that.
Yeah.
And let me, you know, there were scary. I can tell stories. This is very therapeutic, but like, is that grief? And you'd be like, well, no, it's your dad's alive. I mean, he is, he's doing very well right now, but there are some things I don't know if my dad's going to get back and I don't know how to deal with that.
Well, I think you can grieve for all kinds of lost relationships, even if somebody is still alive.
Yeah. So I think I'm doing that.
And sometimes people are lost to you and not dead.
Oh, see? Yeah. These are true.
I think that's all I can handle.
I see. Ironically, I know this is going to shock a lot of you. I could just keep going. And I wish, I don't know that you could have told anybody how to prepare for this.
No.
You know what I mean? I was going to give advice, my advice, which is people say this advice all the time where they're like, tell them that you love them on a Tuesday when you're 19 years old or 28 or 76, do that. Like spend time with them because that is the thing that matters. Because when you can't, and you can tell someone this only so much before they get it. And a lot of times you just can't get it until you get it. But like spend time with them. It's like, I don't know, I'm going to stay home tonight or I'm going to go out to dinner with my mom. It's like, go to dinner. But I need some away time. And I'm not saying don't, you know, and spend every minute, but like one day you won't be able to do it and you're going to be pissed at it.
I wish I had known this earlier, but I'm learning it now and that's okay. But emotionally, I like to be in control. I like to hold super tight. And I have to let go. And not like out of control, but what I've learned. And these are like happy tears and sad tears all at the same time. As I ride the wave of grief, waves, instead of holding on so tightly and trying to keep control, I'm feeling the deepest lows and the highest highs. Mm-hmm. And I feel alive for probably the first time in a long time. Because instead of just feeling in this box here, I feel that. And like, I'm personally working on crying more.
Hard no.
Because that is actually a really, really hard thing for me to do. But like actually crying when I'm sad. And that has really helped me over the last year. And I think I'm not like seeking out opportunities to be sad and cry about things. But when I feel those things, I do cry. And that almost for me right now is making me appreciate that much more of like the time that I did have with that person. And that's been really cool for me.
Yeah. I mean, I talked about this is, while my mom was, in the last couple months of her life, I was like, you do a lot of self-reflection, right? So I'm sitting there with her. And again, she's not talking or caring about stuff. She's like, why are we watching Wheel of Fortune? And I'm like, let's talk about deeper stuff. So she didn't ask me, but I was like, I'm going to do something cool to change the world. I'm going to do it in your name. And she was like, okay. She was like, great. Pass the ranch. And I was like, what? And so that's where that event that I threw last year, and I talked about this a little bit, that's where that party at CSM came about, which I was like, I just want to show my mom, even though she's not here, I'm doing her name. And, I got slick or clever when I put her name in the logo, but I hid it in plain sight. So, for those who haven't seen my logo, I'll share it. But it was party with a purpose. And I told the graphic designer, I'm like, hide her name in plain sight somehow. And he got all clever. And so he made in the word party. He made the P and the A and the T capital because her name was Pat. And I was so there was a lot to that party. Because everything, it's simple, but not easy, right? I got funding and then this person falls through and then it's not going to happen. And then this thing says, it's too much money or whatever. So, to an event, it's not up and to the right. Like you get, it's success is not that way. It's like, so there was moments when this thing wasn't happening. So I called my buddy who's a graphic designer and I said, make a logo. And I gave him that prompt and he did, and then as soon as I saw it I was like, now it's real. And now it's not like I discount that whole idea of the secret, like the universe is all powerful. As soon as I had a logo on my chest, I probably came off different in all my pitch meetings, and I was like, we're gonna change. And I never brought up the fact that it was for my mom. I didn't want that to be why people did it, but I was like, we're gonna change the world. I'm gonna throw a banger of a party. And you're going to be there. Your company's going to have a logo on it. And you're going to spend but you're going to spend 15 grand anyway. I'm just going to spend it better. And they were like, all right. But that was my way of being like, all right, I need to do something active to give a nod to my mom. And I was a little upset that I didn't get to do, because my idea was, now I want to have party with a purpose 2 and 3 and 17. I want 17 years from now. And then my dad goes and has a stroke. And I'm like, I have no bandwidth to do anything. I can't brush my teeth. I was the same way. I was like, I can't make food. I can't throw a charity party. I do not have the mental capacity. Yeah. I'll do it again. I've actually already got an idea for next year. It's coming to Texas. CSM's in Texas.
Sure is.
Instead of hiding it, what if we did a TEDx? What if we got a TEDx license? And it cannot be there's a lot of TEDx rules. It can't be attached to like sponsors. There's a lot of rules. But I'm like, and then you can't like make money. You can't sell tickets to it. I just talked to a guy who got a TEDx license. And I'm like, that's sort of why people come to CSM anyway. Like there's the McMillan lecture, but that's not a TED talk. So I was like, why don't we do that? That's a cool way to not just, hey, Jimmy's just the guy who throws parties and does bourbon tastings. I was like, yeah, but you could do the same change the world vibe with the TEDx talk.
So, but you're also celebrating your mom with a party because she loved a party.
Correct. Party with a purpose. Yeah, she would have loved that party because there was food and vibe and band and alcohol and slides and cargo nets and people were just being goofs. And I'm like, that's stuff. So anyway.
You were all productive. I just got tattoos.
Did you get a tattoo?
Oh yeah, I got one for my dad and one for my friend. I got this one. You can't really see it from where you are. It says "It is well" on it, and that's for my dad. And then I got this one, which is kind of like the mountains and the ocean. she was definitely like the ocean girl and I was the mountain girl. She was like, you know, go with the flow. Like, she's a beautiful human that could go with the flow and circle the earth and like support life wherever she went, you know? And I'm just like this like rigid mountain. But she would always come to the mountain, you know what I mean? And like bring that flow with her. So that's what I got for her and for my dad.
What was the one, why you gave a description about the a mountain and the ocean. What about the one for your dad? Like, talk to me about that one.
So my dad was a minister, which people who know me probably think it's funny that I'm a preacher's kid. And I'm not really a religious person now, but one of my favorite things about going to church, actually, I think was my dad. I don't think it was like the church stuff itself, because listening to him teach every week basically was really amazing. But I also really liked the singing, and one of my favorite songs and his favorite songs was It Is Well. Wow. And it was written by a man who lost his entire family at sea. His wife and his children drowned at sea. And it's like, basically, whatever happens, I know it is well in my soul. And so I remember that, like when I'm missing my dad and when I'm having trouble processing that grief and when like, I feel like it's not fair that he didn't get to meet all of his grandchildren. Like, I just remind myself, you know, like I can just like rub that spot. It is well, like
it's cool.
It's okay.
My brother my brother's got a bunch of tattoos, and we talked about, like, I had a moment where I was like, let's get tattoos for mom. And then I was like, I couldn't think of any. I have no tattoos. He has a bunch, and I couldn't think of anything. So I was like, I don't want to just do it just to do it. So maybe there'll be a moment. So I always ask that question, like, why that, you know, why that one and how did you do it? But I'm also indecisive, and tattoos are, you know, pretty permanent things.
They are.
Mostly.
They are. I've got this one for my kids. That's my celebration tattoo. Yep. So
nice. Did you ever hear about the study on tattoo artists and pain? It was like a pain scientist who wound up like interviewing a bunch of tattoo artists, and it was, you know, it's obviously a subjective study. I'll put it in the notes, or somebody will find it. Maybe Rebecca will find it. And the idea was, they talked to people getting tattoos and tattoo artists, because you're the person doing it. And they said, when the tattoo is overall, and obviously it's a lot of anecdotes strung together, but when the tattoo is about something positive, people report that it hurts less. And when the tattoo is about something painful, it hurts more. And the idea was like, oh, does the brain influence pain? It's like, well, no, it's pain is pain. And they're like, so obviously more, you know, and this is how researchers stay in business. More research would need to be done in this area to confirm the fun or to find out more. But that, it was like interesting. I like the non-traditional approach of like, let's go ask doctors or pain scientists about pain. They were asking tattoo artists and people getting tattoos. Cause the stimulus is similar, right? It's a needle going in X number of jabs a second, and you know, it takes time and yada yada. But they were reporting that what it was about affected how much pain they felt, they reported.
I don't feel like tattoos are really painful. So,
and other people would disagree with that.
Yeah, so I don't have anything anecdotal to contribute to that, because one of them is kind of a happy tattoo, and then I've got three that are kind of not. And
well, you should just have that T-shirt that says "I have a high pain tolerance." That would be you.
No, like, I mean, I'm going through surgical rehab. I almost like cried at PT last night. So no, I do not. But tattoos apparently don't bother me.
Right, right. Or it could be how you view them, which is like how we go into pain. Where pain is you got the whole like it's biological, it's psychological, it's a mix, it's social, right? Yeah. There's a mix. There's biology of the needle hitting your skin and doing the thing. That's bio. There's psycho, what you think and feel about it. And then there's the social. What would the social be here? My analogy I got to 66% of my analogy. Well, I guess what society says a tattoo is supposed to do. Right? Why you get it on the outside of your skin to show the world. That's the social part, I think. If I'm wrong, someone else correct me. That's the beautiful about these things. I get DMs like, so you mentioned it at minute 34, you said this, that was wrong. And I'm like, you're right. But I was doing it live at the speed of life, and you could Google things after me. But most of the time, people are super nice about it when they correct me. And I like to be corrected because I'd rather get it right. Anyway, all right. Well, thank you for the therapy session. How do you want to wrap up? What are our parting shots for today? Yeah, these have to be beat. They don't have to be. Don't set the bar low. They don't have to be deep and prophetic. They just be make it real. What would you want to leave people with?
Well, I thought of an intro, but I'm just going to use it for the outro here. Okay. We started the conversation talking about state shapes. And the states come in all different shapes, like grief.
Ah, yes. And there's no right shape and no wrong shape.
No right shape.
Although Florida's a little suspect. You know,
we'll give Florida grief a pass on this one.
Yeah. Rebecca?
I think sometimes grief feels like something very personal, but sometimes it can be overwhelming. And if you can't carry it by yourself, it's okay to do something like this and share it with other people. It's okay to ask for help. So don't just experience it how you experience it. And if you need somebody to help you carry it, there are people that will do that.
And that I will yes and that it, you can call someone to talk about it while you're grieving, and you don't have to talk to them about grief.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You'd be like, what's up? What's up with them Rangers? How they doing? You know? And then it might come up. Because that's the whole thing, right? Either Vivek Murthy, together, he said like women talk to each other and guys talk next to each other. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would call someone and be like, hi, I'm sad. Can we talk? But I might call and like talk for a while and then be like, sort of miss my mom. Like that's talking next to it. You know what I mean? Instead of being like, I would like to go out and have wine and talk about this grief that I'm feeling. I would never say that. Doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just not right for me. I would just repeat, people have always said it better. So I would say that grief is the unexpressed love that we didn't get to share with people. So look at it that way. And it's sort of like, it's a good thing. It's a reminder. It's a souvenir of that person's life and what they meant on you. And I think that's a better way to look at it. So you know what? That's my story. And I'm sticking to it. So thank you, guys.